been a tough week in the life of Whitestone. By the way, my name's Eric. There are a lot more people here than the last time I was here. So you may not know me. It doesn't matter much. But my name's Eric. At least you know my name now as I talk to you. I've been a friend of Whitestone for many, many years now. A friend with many of the folks who attend here and the family here. But also I had some significant experiences in my spiritual walk on a trip to Haiti in 2005. One of those was the walk up to that building that we saw at Coqueshant. Maybe the most beautiful experience of my life in worship. I'm a pretty big boy, so when I'm hiking, I'm huffing, right? I don't know. I usually hike when somebody's chasing me with a knife, okay? I mean, it's not like my pastime, but everywhere in Haiti you hike, and that time it was real muddy, and our shoes were caked up, and people were sliding all over the place and falling, and which is hilarious for me. For some reason, I like to see people fall, but I fell a couple times, so I laughed at myself, but we took a long hike. I don't know how long it was. You guys could tell me. You guys could remind me. But from the road where the box truck dropped us off, I guess, and we hiked and hiked and hiked. Anyway, at the top of this hill is where that building sits. And for those of you who haven't been there and heard those girls' voices, maybe the most significant worship experience of my life. I think at the time there were 13 or 14 girls there. Were those 13 or 14 girls singing praise to the Lord on the last half mile of my hike, I guess. It was unbelievable, the presence and the Spirit of God that was in that place. So I've had some significant experiences with you all. I can't say that I'm as connected to Haiti as this fellowship is. I can say that I keep up. I've read all week the emails and what Rachel has sent and what Mark has sent, and my conversations with Andy. I can tell you this, that if in fact you have not been moved to tears this week about the plight of the people in Haiti, not just those that we minister with from this fellowship, I'll just tell you, your check engine light's on. Okay? The Lord looked upon a city and saw the despair, and He wept. And we ought to weep. We ought to weep for those children. But then we ought to rejoice as well, because we know that God's kingdom is advancing. And God's kingdom is coming. And that while we look around kind of the lay of the land right now in our own personal lives, maybe in the life of Haiti and maybe especially in the life of those girls and the pastors and the wives and children and the destruction and the loss and the despair, we've got to also look to the King, because He will reconcile all of this. He will reconcile all of this. He's the Redeemer, and He will redeem it all. Nothing has been lost. All has been gained for His kingdom. That's a tough one to swallow, but He will redeem it all. So it has been a tough week in the life of Whitestone Church and the life of the family here. It's been an unbearable week, of course, in the life of Haiti. The loss of life, a little girl, an overseer of the churches, destruction of buildings. You could say that that earthquake has produced quite a storm. A storm of emotions in us. Emotions like fear when Odette is missing. The counter emotion like joy when we find out that she's safe with her parents. Panic in the girls' lives at Coqueshant when the walls start to cave in. Sadness when the little one doesn't make it. Worry for Brian as he flies out to help and treks through the jungle to be a real man of genius, Jesus. Y'all like that, didn't you? He is, I'm telling you, He's a real man of Jesus. Beyond that, it's been a tough stretch in this family, if we're going to be honest, and I know I'm an outsider, but it's been a tough stretch in this family of believers just beyond this week. It's been a tough time in the life of Whitestone Church. There's been a pastor transition. There's been hurts, those kind of things. There's been some families you've been connected with for a long time, maybe not sitting next to you like they used to. You could say that these transitions have produced their own storms in life, your own personal storms. On Monday morning at 5:30 a.m., let me preface this by saying I was talking to a friend of mine who's a real preacher. I only do this on Sundays when you invite me, but he does it every Sunday, right? He's a real preacher. He said, "How long does it take you to prepare your messages?" And I said, "Well, you know, it depends. Sometimes the Lord just floods it to you. And you sit at your computer, if you're a note guy like me, and you just fire it off, right? It's just the Lord's just coming. He's just giving you stuff. And then sometimes it's some of this, you know, you're looking around, you're reading, you're looking at dictionaries, you know, you're looking at the great theologians. And sometimes it's harder. But on 5:30 a.m., Monday morning of this week, I woke up and the Lord said something to me. He said this, okay? Tell or speak to Whitestone about the storms. Speak to Whitestone about the storms. We all face storms in our life beyond Haiti, right? Beyond the body life of this fellowship. Each and every one of us encounter storms in our life. I mean, if you're sailing through life, you better know that on the horizon, at some point, you're going to encounter a storm. Some come quickly. They just pop up, lightning flashes, thunder rolls, and earthquakes. And you find yourself in the middle of a storm that you didn't see coming. Maybe it's a death in the family. Maybe it's a sudden breakup or divorce. Maybe it's a loss of job. But some of them come real fast, don't they, the storms of life. And then some of them come kind of slowly. You see the clouds form on the horizon. You've heard the forecast. You know it's coming. Maybe the transmission that's been slipping in your car for a while finally gives up ghost and you don't have the money to pay for it. You knew it was coming. Maybe the doctor tells you if you don't change your habits, you're going to probably be a high candidate for diabetes. And one day your checkup gives you bad news. You knew it was coming. Some storms come quickly. Some storms come very slowly. But no matter what, no matter the speed of their arrival, we all face storms in our life. And back to Monday morning, the Lord woke me up at 5:30 a.m. and said, "Speak to Whitestone about the storms." Specifically, He told me to relay three passages of Scripture. The first one is in Jonah 1, if you want to put a little note there. The second one is in Acts 27. And the third one is in Mark, let's see, it's in Mark 4, I think. Maybe Matthew 4. We'll get there. Don't worry. Anyway, He told me to tell you about the storms. And each of those stories are real pictures of storms. Now, we've read these stories before, and normally, like in the story of Jonah, we think of it from Jonah's perspective. But what I want us to do this morning is explore the Word and figure out how we weather the storms and how we conquer the storms. And to do that, I think we need to look at it through the eyes of the people on the boat, not the main characters. In the first story of Jonah, Jonah is the main character. We tell our children from this high up about the story of Jonah and the big fish. In the second one, Paul is kind of the main character. We speak a lot about Paul. He wrote a lot of books in the New Testament. He's kind of one of our heroes. He's the main character. And in the third one, we normally see Jesus as the main character, but today we're going to look at it a little bit differently, and we're going to look at the people on the boat. So let me read this first story to you from Jonah. Jonah 1. "The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, 'Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me.' But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, 'How can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us and we will not perish. So they asked him, tell us. The sailors said to each other, come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity. They cast lots and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, tell us who is responsible for making all this trouble. What do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you? He answered, I'm a Hebrew and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven who made the sea and the land. This terrified them. I like that. This terrified them and they asked, what have you done? They knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, what do we do to make the sea calm down for us? Pick me up and throw me into the sea, and it will become calm. I know that it's my fault the great storm has come upon you. Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried to the Lord, O Lord, please do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, O Lord, have done as you pleased. Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. Now, that's a pretty long passage, but let's unpack this just for a second from the, not from Jonah's perspective, but from the men on the boat. First, let's figure out the storm. The storm, it said, came pretty quickly because it used the word the storm arose. It also said the storm was from the Lord, that the Lord sent a mighty hurricane wind. It was a violent storm. Obviously, it was a big enough storm that they started throwing stuff overboard. The word says that the ship was going to break. Essentially, the waters got rougher and rougher, so it was an evolving storm. It was one that started pretty big, but then got more intense and more intense. And the passengers on the boat, they did everything that they could, or everything that they knew. They took decisive action pretty quickly, actually. They started praying to their own gods. They started releasing cargo off of the ship. They took some pretty good, what sailors would say, actions to take. But none of that worked. Then they figured out what the problem was. And the problem was a dude named Jonah. Imagine this for a second when they cast lots and they go ask Jonah the question, Jonah, what have you done? And he says, well, I messed up. You got to pitch me overboard. Well, they huddle up as passengers or sailors and they go, man, this is a tough call. I mean, this is kind of scary. What do we do? Men of valor, they decide that they're going to continue on their own to try to row back to shore. And they recognize after time and intensity and the storm growing that, we can't do this. We do not have the power to fight this storm. And so Jonah walks the plank. Now, this is a very good story that the Lord's given us this morning because it's the way we fight storms a lot. When you have a storm in your life, and I have a storm in my life, what we normally do is we attack it with everything we have in our own physical power. We start throwing stuff overboard, we start looking around, we start trying on our own to row back to shore. But essentially, there was one thing that had to happen for this storm to reduce and go back to calm. There's a spiritual principle taught in this storm, and it's the principle of pruning. So just listen to these couple of verses from John 15, 1 and 2. I'm the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will even be more fruitful. See, the principle at work here is that there are times in our life where we need to cut some things off, and there are times in our life that we need to do some pruning. And in this specific story, it's obvious that there needed to be something done drastically, and something done that even would cause pain to stop the storm. Now, let's be honest. There are storms in our life because there is some stuff in our life that needs to be cut out. There are storms in our own lives personally because there is stuff in our lives that needs to be cut out. There's stuff in our lives that needs to be thrown overboard. Now, I don't know any of y'all well enough to, I wouldn't pick you out of a crowd anyway and say this, but I'll give you my example. I have a beautiful relationship with a wonderful girl named Kim. 16 years we've been married. We have a little boy named Elijah. He's 6. She's beautiful in every way. But there was a time in our life, somewhere around 2001 to 2002, where our relationship was in pretty rough waters. Pretty rough waters. You guys have probably known people who have experienced this, or maybe you've experienced it yourself. But there were even moments and nights that we slept in separate rooms. There were moments that I wondered, even during the relationship, are we going to make it? Now, I'd been in ministry for 10 years. Everybody from the outside probably thought, man, this is a golden couple. They're so happy. I was faking everybody out. But honestly, on the inside, there was a storm brewing. I mean, lightning flashing. And you know what I figured out? And the Lord helped me figure out on a day that my face was in the ground, in tears in my bedroom, is that many women will know that this is the case, but I was the problem. Yeah, chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. The problem was, is that I had some stuff in me that needed to be cut out and some stuff in me that needed to be pruned to bear fruit. I had some stuff that needed to be thrown overboard. And let me shock you. You know what it was? Ministry. I had placed my ministry above my marriage. I had placed my so-called devotion to kingdom business above my life with Kim. My work, my schedule, my time, my energy, my effort were clear indicators that I had some things that needed to be thrown overboard. And it was tough. It was real tough because you come to the moment where you figure out, in this way to weather a storm, you figure out what it is, right? You figure out what it is, but you just don't want to let it go. It's hard to let go. It's hard to make Jonah walk off the plank. It's hard to make ministry walk off the plank. But sometimes in our lives, when we're in storms, we need to look inside and see, why am I here? And what needs to be cut out of my life so that I can see the sun again? The second story is in Acts 27. I'm going to read it to you. It's about Paul sailing for Rome. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they thought they had obtained what they wanted. Stop right there just for a second and read that again, because this parallels our storms in life. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they thought they had obtained what they wanted. So they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wild hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and were drifting along. As we passed to the lee of a small island called Cauda, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure. When the men had hoisted it aboard, they passed ropes under the ship itself to hold it together. Fearing that they would run aground on the sandbars of Sartus, they lowered the sea anchor and let the ship be driven along. We took such a violent battering from the storm that the next day they began to throw cargo overboard. On the third day they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. After the men had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and said, "Men, you should have taken my advice." You gotta love that guy. Like the "I told you so" guy in the story, right? Love Paul. "Men, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. Then you would have spared yourself this damage and loss. But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night an angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, stood beside me and said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God graciously has given you the lives of all who sail with you.' So keep up your courage, men, for I have the faith in God that it will happen just as He told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island. I know this is a long story, but let me finish on the shipwreck. On the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea when about midnight the sailors sensed they were approaching land. They took soundings and found that the water was 120 feet deep. Short time later, they took soundings again and found it was 90 feet deep. Fearing we would run or be dashed against the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight. Y'all ever been there in the storm praying for daylight? In an attempt to escape from the ship, the sailors let the lifeboat down into the sea, pretending they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. Skip down just before to 33, just before dawn. Paul urged them all to eat. For the last 14 days, he said, you've been in constant suspense and you've gone without food and you haven't eaten anything. Now take some food. You need it to survive. Not one of you will lose a single hair from his head. After he said this, took bread, gave thanks to God in front of them all. Then he broke it and began to eat. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. Altogether, there were 276 of us on board. When they'd eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the grain into the sea. When daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but saw a base with sandy beach, where they decided, that's funny, they saw a boy on a sandy beach. That's nice, isn't it? They saw a bay with a sandy beach, where they decided to run the ship aground if they could. Cutting loose the anchors, they left them in the sea at the same time, untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind, made for the beach. Ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. Let's just talk about this for a second. I know it's a long story, but it's a great principle also. If the first one is that you got to cut some things away, the first one is that you got to throw off those things that so easily entangle us, and you have to prune those things which need to bear fruit, then the second one is that there are times in a storm that we just have to anchor down. Now, this storm started with a slow breeze. They knew it was coming. The word says sailors thought they got what they wanted for good sailing conditions. Turned into a monster storm. If you remember the blizzard of 93, anybody, the blizzard of 93? That was actually the same kind of wind, the northeaster. Verse 15 says, boat gave way to storm, was carried along. 19 and 20, it was a long storm. They didn't see stars for a few days. Verse 33 shows us that it was at least 14 days. And verse 20 tells us that they got to a point that they had given up hope for being saved. Verse 17, though, we see the principle. We see it in verse 17 and verse 29. At first, they drop an anchor. And in verse 29, they drop four anchors. There are times in our life, in our storms, where yes, we need to throw things off. But there are times in our storms of life, you all, that we just need to anchor down. While one of them is a principle of pruning, the next one in the same passage, right there in John 15, number 4, is a principle of abiding. And it says this, remain in me and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. There are times in our life, and I think this Haiti time right now in our life as a body together. And yes, I'm assuming myself into this with you because I'm in the body of Christ. That means we're brothers and sisters whether you like it or not. Somebody said amen like they didn't like it. Wait, we're brothers, sister. Just kidding. Amen. Sometimes, like in this moment with Haiti, we've got to anchor down. The principle is to abide in Him, to remain in Him, to set our focus, our attention, our eyesight, our hearts toward Jesus. And to weather a storm that is this tragic in our lives, like Haiti, or to weather even a storm that happens to the body life of a church, you've got to abide in Him. You've got to anchor down. And so I'm asking you, look at the storms of your life personally and these that we've been talking about in our body life. And tell me this. Don't tell me out loud, but what is it? Because there are two ways to work the storm. You either need to cut some stuff out or you need to anchor down. Those are ways really to weather a storm. Yes, storm is relieved on those things. But the third story is the beautiful story. Because the first two stories are principles for us. And the third story, I believe, is law. There's a difference between principle and law. Law is something that you follow almost by mandate. And I believe this next story is not something we just consider when it's time and we're facing a storm. I think it's what we need and intend to do with the Father even in their service today. And it's the story of Jesus on a boat with His boys. Mark 4:35. That day when evening came, He said to the disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took Him along just as He was in the boat. There were also other boats with them. A furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke Him and said to Him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." And at that, the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to the disciples, and I would have loved to have been there in this moment, "Why are y'all so afraid? Man, don't wake me up from a nap. Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified, and I like that. The reason I've said that twice is purposely, is because an encounter with God is sometimes terrifying. And sometimes the scariest thing to do is what these men did. For some reason. And what these men did is the principle or the law that we should connect with today. And that is, they woke up Jesus. There are times in our life in storms that we need to throw things off. There are times in our life in storms that we need to anchor down. But no matter which principle you decide on for your personal storm, believe this is true. That in a storm, the one place to go is to the stern to find Jesus. In this storm, you notice that it was a short ride. They were just kind of going over a lake, honestly. There were boats behind them. Verse 37 shows us the storm comes up quickly, breaks over the boat. It's nearly swamped. Jesus asleep. Disciples woke Him, asking a crazy question like, "Don't you care?" Let me tell you, Jesus cares for your storm. He cares that you're hurting. He cares that there are some times in our lives where we're suffering in something. We always see this story as kind of nonchalant, like, "Oh, yeah, hold on, I'll get to that storm in a minute." There's no reason to read it that way. We don't know if He dashed up and quieted and rebuked. But we know with His authority what He did when He saw His boys, His family, in trouble. Is He rebuked the waves, rebuked the winds, and rebuked the storm. Boom, calm, done. So I'm saying to Whitestone Church this morning, my friends, my family in Christ, is that we need Jesus today. We need Jesus this morning. We are in such a place, specifically with what's happened in Haiti. We're at such a place that we need to go down and wake up Jesus. And we need to see the power of Jesus made manifest. We need to see the power of Jesus to come up on the top side of this storm that we're in together and rebuke those things and calm those things which have caused pain and strife and grief. I don't know where you stand theologically on this issue, but I can tell you this, is that I know the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But Jesus comes that we might have life and have it abundantly. We need to wake up the Jesus in our hearts, in our minds, and we need to fight this storm with the spiritual, material, and weaponry that we have. And so I'm going to ask you guys, as the band comes up, to do something different this morning. I think we need to respond to the Lord. I think we need to go to Jesus together. I think we need to look around, and yes, we've got pain and we've got suffering, we've got hurt, we're harmed, we've got questions, we don't know why all this happens. But I can tell you one thing, that the only way for a storm of this severity to be calmed is for us to go to Jesus. So we're going to do a couple of things. One, we're going to open this place up. Andy told me there are no rules, so this is the altar, okay? And the first thing we're going to do is we're going to worship. We're going to call on to Jesus. But then secondly, I'm going to bring some people up that I think the Lord has prompted me to bring up this morning. And we're going to pray for them. And so I want the church to be engaged in this. All right? Don't sit passively. This is the time where we're engaging in the real business. I mean, you had to listen to me for however many minutes. This is the real business of the morning. Worshiping Him. Celebrating Him. And waking Him up and asking Him to calm the seas. So let's worship the Lord. And then it will kind of flow, okay? There'll be a break, and we haven't really rehearsed this. There'll be a break, and we'll bring some people up and pray for them. And we'll just center ourselves in the midst of the one, the only one, who can calm this storm. Let's worship.
Just join me.